So hello and welcome to another Thursday night of Blue Sierras Telehealth Radio. I'm Michelle Hager, the managing partner of Blue Sierras Consulting in South Carolina. And tonight, our guest, I'm happy to say, is Alan Morgan, the Chief Executive Officer of the National Rural Health Association. Alan has been working tirelessly across the country to help rural organizations adopt and assist healthcare access and also work with those organizations to improve their community access and their overall health access. Thank you so much for joining the show today, Alan.
Michelle, thank you for having me on. I'm really looking forward to our conversation.
It's going to be great. So tell us a little bit about the National Rural Health Association. Who are their members? Who do they serve? The types of organizations that you represent?
Oh, sure. So if you care about rural America and rural health, there's a home for you in the National Rural Health Association. So we're a national nonprofit educational organization. We do networking, we do advocacy, and we do communications, all for the purposes of supporting rural communities and rural healthcare. Our membership, we have a very diverse membership, including just community leaders, clinicians, healthcare executives, and also state officials that oversee rural programs. And I would go so far to even say we have a strong contingent of rural researchers nationwide. Truly, if you care about rural America, NRHA is a great place for you.
Absolutely. And your organization, obviously, as you just mentioned, advocates on behalf of these organizations. And it's so important. This latest study that I read from, I think the advisory board did a report on rural hospitals. Over 600 of them are actually at risk of closing in this year alone, due to financial and depleted financial resources and other challenges around the financial space. I think a lot of folks may have had a false impression that around COVID, this was really a boom for healthcare, but in fact, it isn't. And for rural healthcare in particular, it was a really difficult time. The implications of which, when a rural health hospital closes, is in fact, there is not healthcare available to those communities because often the drive to a larger institution, it could be over 60 miles away, which in the case of patients that have strokes is outside of the golden hour, to be able to recover from a stroke, for example. So, talk about some of the challenges that these rural organizations have and what NRHA is helping to do to assist them.
Absolutely. And the advisory board's data matches our data. Our own research shows 635 rural hospitals at risk for closure in the immediate future.
Wow.
And we've already seen so far this year 11 rural hospitals close. And when a rural hospital closes, not only do you lose access to 24/7 emergency room service, you lose the community's largest employer in many cases. And Michelle, I think people, when they think about hospitals, they think about inpatient care, emergency care, which is accurate, but they don't realize that hospitals serve as the hub of these communities when it comes to long-term care, in many cases, EMS, behavioral health. You really lose the hub of all healthcare access in that community. And that's the reason why it's such an important a fight to keep these rural hospitals open.
I think it's also not really understood that there are jobs from obviously doctors to janitors and painters in hospitals. So the spectrum of jobs that are lost when a rural healthcare organization closes, when a facility closes, it's not just, the loss of the healthcare services, which is huge in terms of the health of the patients and the people in that community. But it's also the loss of other types of jobs that are supporting the community at large. I know in South Carolina, there are quite a few initiatives around workforce development in order to address some of the rurality and rural health organization and rural challenges. Not South Carolina, for example, is 90% rural, and we have had some closures of rural organizations, and there's a private-public partnership around workforce challenges and trying to address this and trying to make sure that we can bring the right workers to the area that can be supported by not only healthcare, but by schools and other services that could be surrounded by that. Are there other, and I don't want to throw you a curveball here, but are there other programs that you are aware of in rural areas that are similar to that, or others that you might be able to speak to?
Yeah, well, let me first address your component on workforce. I think most people recognize when a rural hospital leaves, you're going to lose your clinicians, your administrative staff, and your nurses. But I think they
higher
need
paying
to
jobs.
And take a one step further is the other businesses in town that also benefit from that hospital, florist shops, some of the food service. Cleaning other shops in town lose that. So that's a second one. But I got to tell you, the most important aspect of it is economic development and new people coming into that town. Obviously, if you don't have access to a hospital, you don't have good schools, you don't have small business, that keeps people from coming into your town to start with. So that's a hidden job loss that you see as a result of that. So what programs are in place? Wow. You know, that's the good thing about rural is flexibility, and there's a lot of different models across the U.S. So there's no one silver bullet on how to address these workforce issues, but I think we have a lot of good practices out there.
Yeah, I know certainly, you know, as I mentioned in my state, we're working hard to try to increase, you know, certainly nursing skills and also technical skills, private partnerships, private public partnerships around IT skills and things like that to try to further that along. One of the things that in rural areas, obviously, chronic disease management is so important. Some of the top healthcare issues in rural healthcare is heart disease, cancer, lung disease, and stroke, as I mentioned earlier. For a variety of different reasons, that could be cultural, that could be related to access to care, and before you have, you know, a resistance to care as well, trust issues potentially in the community. Although in rural organizations, the healthcare providers tend to be some of the most trusted folks in the community themselves. But we know that providers in those spaces, there's a lot of provider shortage in rural healthcare. And with some of the legislation that we have seen come through with telehealth in particular, and we're looking for additional legislation where we might be able to see providers practice more freely across state lines to be able to bring more specialty care, for example, into a rural organization or rural community. Have you heard from the rural organizations? What are they talking about? What is important to them in order to bring more providers to the space and serve the communities that they live in?
That is an enormous topic. And not surprisingly, gosh, from a historical standpoint, rural is the short study of workforce shortages. That's when it comes to healthcare. Telehealth is such an enormous tool. And I know we're going to talk a lot about that. Let me back up a little bit to say that right now, to answer your question, nursing, that is the number one concern right now across the U.S. when it comes to healthcare, making sure they have adequate nursing supply in there. So maybe surprisingly, number two really is the support administrative staff in these facilities. And you don't hear a lot of discussion about that when I'm talking to our CEOs and CFOs. That really comes to the forefront. And then what you mentioned, what you led with, is just the clinician, MD and DO. That's always been a challenge. And telehealth is a wonderful tool to address this. But Michelle, let me acknowledge the fact that we're doing it wrong in the U.S. I mean, how do we identify kids to go into these? Well, we take the kids with the highest scores, and they then go to colleges in urban areas. And these kids oftentimes are upper income urban kids trained in urban areas. And then we're dumbfounded that they don't want to practice in rural South Carolina.
Right.
We're doing this all wrong, right? We need to do a much better job of making sure we have our local rural kids going to rural residency programs and training there in the communities instead of losing them or not getting them in the rural healthcare pipeline to begin with.
I think that's true. And we're seeing some initiatives around that in the colleges, trying to bring more of the sort of pre-medical courses into the rural areas and allowing folks to take those courses in their local communities, either online or offering them in the local spaces themselves, and then being able to transfer, as you said, unfortunately, to an urban area to finalize that education. But if you're in that community longer and you're from that community, then you're more likely to return to that community and provide care.
Oh my gosh, absolutely. Yeah. I always get the question, what's wrong with rural? Nothing is wrong with rural. It's that we keep trying to bring these urban kids into our communities.
Yeah, exactly. And it's really tough. I have family that live in very rural areas, and you know, the level of personal relationships that they have with their caregivers is so high. And I don't think we get that in an urban space. So we always tend to think that, oh, it's an urban area, so that's going to be the best care. That's going to be the best of all of it, right? But not necessarily. There's some really great ties and relationships that are created in these rural spaces. So let's talk a little bit about telehealth, you know, a topic that's always on my mind. We know that it's been very difficult for rural organizations. They're very busy. They have a lot, as we've already talked about, to think about. But it has been a challenge around adoption of telehealth. And I think there's a couple of reasons for that. I could share my own, but I'm interested to know your thoughts and what can we do to dispel maybe some of the challenges that you may bring up.
Yeah, well, let's start with this. And that is in a rural context. And I get it. People really appreciate and value the personal connection of a primary care visit. And as a result of that, it's not surprising. In a small town, they want to get in and they want to see their doctor personally. And that's important. And we don't want to lose that. But I think what we really are interested in is that rural physician in a rural health clinic being able to, through telehealth, visit a homebound senior citizen there in their home for a wellness check. And I think that's really what we're talking about. And how do we encourage that? And Michelle, you and I have talked about this before. I think we lump all of telehealth into one big bucket. And I'm not aware of a rural hospital that currently is not using teleradiology. So in that sense, telehealth is all over the U.S. Almost every rural clinician uses teleconsultation, either formally, informally, getting paid, not getting paid. And again, in that context, it's pretty widespread. You and I talk a lot about access to specialty care. Yeah. And when it comes to workforce, you really do need a telehealth tool to address that. And we're just never going to get an cardiologist, the state's top cardiologist, to practice in a small town. You don't have the volume. It's never going to happen. And I think that's where we really see a great opportunity, and we're seeing more expansion into this area. But again, what I really am concerned about is, and what we'd like to see more of, is that direct primary care visit into a homebound senior's house, so they don't have to get out and travel to the hospital.
Absolutely. And you're right that, you know, in the rural area, the volumes are not there for, you know, a large specialty practice. You're not able to bring those patients in. You know, they just don't exist based on the numbers. But there's no reason why that zip code should be limited. And certainly I know across the country, standards of care around telestroke, for example, you know, that is a standard of care now, that you do have telestroke services, which allow for, in these rural spaces, to be able to access a neurologist very quickly, and therefore be able to save patients and allow them to recover more quickly from a stroke, and therefore become more productive and be productive members of society again. But you're right, this home space, this place of service, as we like to call it in healthcare, of home, is a challenge, because right now I think the legislation is pointing towards allowing and does point towards allowing home for behavioral health services. but the challenges around some of the primary care services. There still seems to be some resistance around full payment or what we call parity of payment around services and primary care services that are provided in the home. And this allows, and I'm getting on my soapbox now, Alan.
Good. Keep going. I'm loving what I'm hearing.
But this allows those primary care doctors that are in these rural spaces to better care for those rural families, that they can reach them wherever they are. And as I mentioned, I have family that live in rural areas. It takes 20 minutes, 30 minutes to drive their kids to school.
Yeah.
So, this is not a pile the three kids into the car and because one of them's sick. Okay, now all of them are sick. And, 30 minutes in the car, however long to sit in the waiting room, then to go get your meds and pile back into the car to go home. This is not a small endeavor where we could easily be able to care for a patient in their home via telehealth and solve tons. I mean, I'm talking about the pediatric space, but this is also true, as you mentioned, in the geriatric space where, patients, this is a stressful day if they have to go to the doctor. That's the, yeah. I mean, how many of us have parents and grandparents that, you hear, oh, I've got to go to the doctor today. That's the biggest thing they have on their plate. And that's because it's an endeavor to move from one place to another. So we need to help our legislators understand the challenges with this community. And I know that Alan, you and NRHA are doing a great job in advocating in that space and helping legislators across the country understand what these challenges are and why we need certain things. But tell us about what you're doing to educate the public and educate the industry. I know you've got an event coming up in September that you'll be conducting, and tell me a little bit about that. Where will that be and who will be there?
Yeah. So I mentioned on the very beginning of this, our broad membership, but it's important to note, we do represent more than 90% of the nation's rural hospitals, rural health clinics, and rural community health centers. And as such, this fall, September 27th through 29th in Kansas City, we'll be having our annual rural health clinic Critical Access Hospital Conference. And this is where we're going to be bringing together the nation's providers, talking about best practices, what's working. And you mentioned chronic care management earlier. That's going to be a huge topic. How do we integrate telehealth into facilities? How do we promote adoption of telehealth? We'll talk about the challenges, but one of the things we really try to hit on is the innovation that's happening in rural communities. And we want to replicate good practices and success stories. When we're talking to policy leaders, we want to make sure we share with them all the barriers and all the challenges. But when we're talking to our own members, we talk about what's working well.
Absolutely. And sharing those best practices are so important. It's the lifeblood of healthcare. That's what we do in all areas of healthcare. So that'll be interesting. So if you're in Kansas City or you want to travel to Kansas City for the National Rural Health Conference, that will be September 27th through 29th. That should be an interesting conference. I hope to see you there, Alan. Thank you as always for being on the show. We'll be talking to Beth O'Connor and Denise Sneecloth after this about rural healthcare as well.
And oh, that's great.
I appreciate you sharing your knowledge and always being a friend to the radio show.
Michelle, thank you. And I appreciate your focus on rural communities as well. Always great to catch up with you.
Thank you so much. And we'll be right back with our next guest on Blue Cirrus Telehealth Radio.